Yoda, why you gotta be a player hater? You know I still must confront Lord Vader.
Luke, not ready are you?
There's a city in the clouds where they're keeping my crew. A Jedi's gotta do what a Jedi's gotta do. Vader, I'm coming for you.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hello, Ted. It is episode 87, and you have a lot of beer this week, so maybe we should get started. What do you think?
We could definitely get started. I'm not going to drink the whole thing, I swear.
I swear. I promise. Pinky swear.
Frank got this for us. Frank has been biking to train for your next bike race together.
Yeah.
And during his training, he passed by this hand-brewed beer in Chatsworth.
Chatsworth.
So there's a Chatsworth brewery. It's called Hand Brewed Beer. And we went there last week for Barbara's birthday. We had a little sampler, each of us, and Barbara found a nice light beer that she liked.
Cool.
And then Frank and I were like, ooh, this is a cool spot. We should come back.
How big is it?
It's small. I was remarking that it's small. You know, if you were thinking about like a garage in an industrial park, which is a lot, you know, kind of the place that it's in, it would be like you could fit like a dozen cars in there, maybe less, 10 cars in there.
So it's like a little entrepreneurial venture someone's doing.
Yeah.
They were home brewers or something, and now they're starting this thing and they're going.
Right. So they have their fifth anniversary coming up in October 12th.
Wait, 5 years and we're just now learning about it?
See, it's just like podcasting, these little hand brewed little, and I said we should start canning your stuff, Jimmy.
Man, I guess so. I need to up my production now.
So Frank bought us tonight this Chubasco. So it's got
Chubasco. Okay.
Chubasco. It's got two kinds of peppers in it.
Uh-oh.
And it's an IPA with 7.7 ABV.
And the pepper, so it's spicy?
Yeah, it's got like a kick to it, as well as like kind of a mellow, smokier spice too. It's got habanero and...
Yikes.
Shoot, I forgot what the other one was.
Man, that's gonna be a burner in the morning.
But look, I got this new glass.
Oh, that's cool.
Looks like a can, right? It's called the can glass.
Yeah, it does. Totally. I get it. It looks dainty, though, like fragile.
Right. Right. I don't think it's that fragile. I've had a couple beers in it.
Okay.
Already,
so. Looks like if you tap it by accident, it's going to crack. I love the local flair. Man, 5 years, though. That's crazy. We just now learned about it. Man, we got to go there. What street is it on?
Yeah, we definitely have to go there. It's on Lassen.
Oh, Lassen. Okay. Like, what's the cross street?
I don't know. Frank drove. Frank always drives, so.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but you'll get this tomorrow. You and Frank, I told Frank, I said, I'll drink a little bit on the pod, and then I'll give you the growler, and you can have the growler over there when you guys visit.
Well, cool. I like the local flair, and we, too, have a local flair, also an IPA. They have a number of beers, stouts and red ales and things, but this is from Santa Maria Brewery.
Oh, yeah.
Santa Maria, where we are in the Central Coast, Santa Maria is about a 30-minute drive. It's the next town north of us, roughly 30 minutes or so north. I mean, we're kind of tucked away and there's like nothing around us but like hills and ranch land. But
right.
With a 30-minute drive north, you wind up in the city of Santa Maria. And it's probably the biggest city in Santa Barbara County at like maybe 125,000 or something. I mean, Santa Barbara County doesn't have a lot of population.
Right.
But Santa Maria Exploration, and it's a West Coast IPA. So I figured, you know, it's good to get that local flair, and so we both pretty much have it.
Yeah.
I'd love to see what this says. Maybe I think I have I don't have my podcast partner over here. It's way too small. I can't even see it. All right, when Clarissa walks in, because she wanted to try some.
Okay.
I'll have to have her read it for me. I don't have any. I need a magnifying glass. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all those national brands, even if they're independents, as an example would be Fat Tire.
Right.
And Fat Tire does a lot of good beer. They're out of Colorado. And there's, you know, there's Deschutes out of Oregon and stuff. And I mean, a lot of these, mm-hmm. they have their fingers into everywhere else. But when you get stuff that,
right.
like here in town is Solving Brewery, and they brew it like literally like a couple miles from our house.
Right.
You know, and then you have Santa Maria, which really, as the crow flies, isn't that far. I mean, less than 20 miles. And there's a bunch of them in Santa Barbara and Goleta and stuff, all these close ones. And now the ones that you're talking about down in the valley in LA and everything. Yeah, you got to support your local.
Yeah, Frank and I watched a little bit of the Dodgers game today and had a beer, picked this growler, and it was awesome.
So you watched the game at the place?
Yeah.
Was it crowded? I mean, was there a lot of people there?
It actually was pretty crowded. We luckily got the one unmarked spot because all of the hand-brewed parking spots were taken. So we thought, oh, wow, must be hopping in there. And it was. It was
hopping.
It was hopping.
You didn't even know. You didn't, like, you're so like into beer, you didn't even realize like you're doing puns now.
The unintended beer pun, yes.
There you go. Dad jokes. All right. So cool. Yeah. I mean, I think we need to do more local as we get local. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like doing stuff that, you know, is more national. And I'd say any listeners out there, if you guys want to send us any beers from like your local towns, we would be happy to review them.
100%.
Yeah. We will not deny beer.
And I think we should do something we don't do. I think we just assume people know the website and stuff. So the website is trailerjunkiespodcast.com.
Yeah, we haven't done that in a while, I think.
I know. Our Twitter handle is tjunkiespodcast. Our Instagram is trailerjunkiespodcast. And what else do we have? I think that's about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I mean, we, you know, we kind of, we're not really, we don't do anything on Facebook, I don't think. I don't.
No.
No, I mean, I think you go to our website and that will get you everywhere that will find all. I mean, we're on all the places that you can listen to, and that'll get you everywhere you need to go.
There you go.
So, Ted, how was your week?
My week was fun. It was a good solid week, a lot of activities. But today I took a day off, and normally it was like a vacation day.
A day off from work?
A day off from work.
Okay.
But I had a bit of a honey-do list around the house, and I fixed the garage door. I did the yard work because we have a busy weekend. So was actually getting stuff done today.
Sometimes you need that, you know, just a day to like to be accomplished.
Right.
It's like life. I mean, it's like every day you're doing what it takes to like tread water. But at some point, like you're in the middle of the ocean. And if you don't do something, you're just going to drown.
Right.
Well, cool. You got stuff done. And is it hot there still?
Oh, my God. It was so hot today.
Dude, here too, man. No, I'm serious. I think it was like 97 or something.
Oh, okay. That's hot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're typically like upper 60s, low 70s.
I know.
And we don't have any air conditioning, right?
Oh, my God. You don't?
No, nobody in town has air because it's 70 degrees every day. You know, like year round, it's 70 degrees. We don't need air.
What do you guys do?
No, we open up the windows.
Uh-huh.
We open up the whole house at night. The house cools. It's like 60 in the morning. And then we shut it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Close the curtains. We just close everything. It's like a dungeon, you know, and it's like a cave. And then it stays cool all day. You know, we go to work or whatever, but it stays cool all day. And then by the end of the day, it warms up. It's not hot, though. It warms up. And then we just open up the house again, and we kind of survive that way. And yeah, you know, it's not bad. But here's the crazy thing, though. And every year, it's like exactly the same. And that is, you have this ridiculously windy week. And cold, right? I mean, you're looking at 30 mile per hour, like sustained winds for hours. I mean, it's like relentless, you know, it just wears you.
Do you bike in that?
Yeah, you know, you do. I mean, and you just kind of survive it.
Uh-huh.
But it's like this just relentless 30 mile per hour wind all day long. I mean, even just walking around, it just wears you down, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 65 and the wind, and it's just like beating you up and your skin's drying out. And it's just horrible. And then the wind stops. And then for like the next 2 to 3 weeks, it's like 95 to 100 degrees every day. And then that breaks, which we're right now, we're in the middle of the, well, I shouldn't even say in the middle, we're in the beginning of the hot phase.
Right.
That breaks. And then like it goes back to 70 and pleasant for the rest of the year. It's just this weird pattern that plays out every year at this time. I mean, like what causes that?
It's a weather purge.
I guess.
It's like the weather wants to be cruel and evil, but it only does it for a very short period of time every year.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be 100 degrees for like a week, and then the weather breaks, and then you're just back to 70 and sunny and pleasant.
So that's your summer.
Yeah, it's like, it's somewhere around mid...
One week long summer.
Yeah, it's somewhere around mid-September to like mid-October it hits, somewhere in that four-week range. For like a week to 2 weeks, we get like super hot, and then it's over. And I'll tell you, the whole town complains. The fans at Walmart all sell out, you know, and every year, like, it's like, really? You don't have your fan knowing it's going to be hot, you know?
You didn't keep it from last year?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what happened to your garage? Your bikes fell?
Yeah, that was my next thing.
Sorry.
No, that's fine, yeah. So I come home from work yesterday, open up the garage door. Yeah, I had the bikes on the wall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, they're just on the wall like for eternity, you'd think. You know what I think happened? I think there must have been like some little earthquake or something that tweaked the house in such a way that they fell out of the studs.
Really?
I don't know. I mean... They're in the studs. So I had, there's 5 bikes hanging on the wall, and I had 4 screws at each end, you know, like 2 at one end, 2 at the other, holding it into the stud.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were up there for like a long time. And then I come home and one day, like they're laying down, and it says, you know, like when you turn your bike upside down on like the handlebars and saddle.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how they all were. They're all just sitting like that. Perfect.
Perfectly. Yeah. They didn't fall over.
No. They're just sitting like that with the 2x4 and the bike hook still in the wheels. Whatever. So Timmy helps me. Like, I'm like, Timmy, hold this bike. And I start undoing the hooks and everything. I get all the bikes. So what I did was, instead of 4 screws on each, you know, 2 on each end, I did the 2 on each end like I did. I moved it a little bit so I get fresh holes. And then I did 4 more because it spans 4 studs. So now it's in all the studs, not just the 2 end studs. But still, the thing's sitting up there for how long? And then one day it decides to just fall out of the wall.
Just gives up.
Yeah, just gave up. And the thing is, the screws and everything, like the threads and the screws stuff, it's like someone just like, I don't know, I just took them out of the box.
They're big lag bolts?
No, they weren't lag bolts. I mean, they were just like regular wood screws. You know, like, I don't know, what were they?
Oh, okay.
4-inch wood screws or something, you know, pretty hefty ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, all I could think is there was like a little tremor, tweaked the house in such a way, it just popped them right off the wall, and bam, the things just came down, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot like our garage door. Our garage door broke because one of the springs was off, and the other side, it was taking all the weight, so it eventually just sheared off one of the bolts, and it popped the other lag bolt out of the wall because the spring is so strong and full of tension with that one, side.
Yeah.
So that's what Frank and I spent the whole morning doing.
You ever replaced what do you call it? You ever replace garage door springs?
Yeah, we did that just today.
Where you do like the quarter turns and you count the turns with the sticks and all that? Is that what you did?
No, we didn't do that. We just have Ann picked up the new spring and then we just installed it.
How did you do the tension?
Oh, we just got it as tight as we could and it was good enough.
Oh my God, you guys are gonna die. No, that's like, I mean, that's like some dangerous work.
Well, that's what we thought. We thought we'd just leave it, you know, we didn't get it to the exact hole we wanted.
So you didn't count like 7 twists and...
But we're like, oh, it's not, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like a twisting thing that we could do.
Huh. Curious to see what you're talking about. No, because I had a broken spring and I had to replace the spring. So I got like the springs for the size door I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you undo the cables on the end and you put the springs on. And
oh, you did the whole, you reassembled the whole spring assembly.
Yeah.
I bought a whole new spring assembly.
Oh, you just bought it all done.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Where'd you get it?
At Ace.
Ace Hardware?
At the Ace Hardware. It's called, I think it's called Tampa Hardware.
Oh, okay.
Over on Tampa.
Yeah. No, I did like... Yeah, I kind of rebuilt the whole thing in my garage, and you do like, you take the iron or the steel sticks and you kind of like put it in, you move it up, you put it in, and you can't let it go because like it's under tension. And like, I mean, if you're not paying attention, I mean, it'll like take you out, you know, like literally.
It'll snap back. Yeah.
Oh, literally. Oh, dude, it was like, I did it off a YouTube video. You think it's a joke? I'm serious.
No, it's not a joke. Anne and Frank and you are perfect. You guys, all you do is look up YouTube videos and figure out how to do stuff.
How do you think we know how to podcast? I mean, come on. All right, man. So speaking of all these bikes, did you watch the Mother Load?
I did watch
it. All right. What are your initial thoughts?
I watched the trailers.
Yeah. Well, the trailers. Yeah. I don't think the movie is out, or if it is, I don't even know where you can see it.
It was strange. I think that was part of their call to action, was like calling you to host a screening of the Mother Load. I think they really want like a community. And I guess this is my first thought of it. It is a community movement film. So
I agree.
A documentary is, you know, informing an audience about a, you know, a historical event or a notable event. But this is almost like a societal, sociological experiment movement that they are trying to promote. So the whole movie is going to be a promotion for the lifestyle of, you know, biking replacing a minivan. And it definitely, like, you have proven it, that it works in some places.
Right.
But as I show this to my kids, they're like, I don't want to ride that. Well, you're too big. Obviously, you'd be riding your own bike.
Sure, yeah.
But then again, we're a little too far from school to be biking to school and stuff like that. So I think we're in the urban setting that doesn't really lend itself to that. And I think, you know, we're in a suburb, so to speak, even though it's all LA. We're far enough away from where we work and where we go to school that it's not feasible to do the biking all over the place.
Yeah, and I think you're completely right when you say it's like a call to action. So, I first learned about this movie 3 years ago from a Kickstarter campaign. And when you talk about the call to action and the community and all this stuff, that's where it began, was on a Kickstarter. And I watched it the day after you talked about, the day we recorded, when you talked about how your movie changed its name a couple of times and finally became Aberration.
Right.
And this movie was called More Car, Less Go. No, wait a minute. More Go. No. What?
I think you had it right.
More
the first
car,
time.
Less go. No, less car, more go. I know.
Cause cargo. Less car, more go. That sounds right. Yeah. It's in the trailer, right? Or is it in the other trailer?
Well, the movie from Kickstarter was Less Car, More Go, and I learned about it in 2016, and I thought, well, this is maybe 2017 when I finally learned about it, because I think the Kickstarter campaign was closed by that point. And I learned about it, and I thought, well, this is cool. When's it coming out? And blah blah blah. All this stuff, you know, that I want to learn about it. And it kind of like fell away and disappeared. I didn't hear anything about it. And I'd look it up and it looked very stale, very stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
It was going nowhere. And every once in a while, I would think back and I'm like, oh yeah, what's going on with that, like, you know, biking documentary and stuff. And like, there was just nothing happening. And I get these emails from League of American Bicyclists and they said, hey, you know, here's this new movie coming out. Check it out. And I'm like, well, what's the new movie? And I looked at it and I'm like, this looks eerily familiar. And I'm like, Mother Load, but it looks like this other one. So I look up the other one, I'm like, oh, it is that movie. And it reminded me though, what was cool about it though was it got me thinking, how many movies go through a name change? Maybe they did some A/B testing, they did some things where it's like, well, let's see how this plays out with the audience versus how
test audience. Yeah.
Yeah, test audience and so on. And for whatever the reason, they landed on Mother Load, which when you add it to the poster art, I guess, and it shows the woman riding a Bockfietz like what we have with the kids in the front and there's like a dog and all this stuff. It's like, it's cool, I think, you know. And what I like about the movie too is when you think about bicycling and when you are in the bicycling community and all this, it's very like white male driven. It's all about expensive road bikes. It's all about all this, you know, like essentially middle-aged men in Lycra, or in other words, mammal. And And what I like about this, though, was it really has that focus on women and women riding with their kids and everybody. I mean, there's white guys, of course, but like all these different people who come together because they just want to like have a different thing other than riding, driving a car or, you know, whatever it is. But I like the emphasis on moms and kids and women getting into bicycling because there's definitely not enough of that.
Right. Yeah. It is an amazing trailer. And I love the way it sets everything up. It sets up the tension with the car drivers.
Hey, bitch, get out of the way. Like, you know,
it actually shows you, like, it has that scene where the kids are in the back of the car and they're rolling up the windows. There's a lot of tension that's built into that scene, and the way it plays out, it's like, oh my God, I never want to be in a car again.
Yeah, right. I know.
So it is nice.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then I think that the second trailer number two, I think is more my favorite because you asked if you picked the right trailer to put on the website. And I think for the general audience, that's the right trailer to be on the website. It kind of just lays it out. It explains it. And it says, this is what the movie is. You come up with those tension scenes like you were just talking. But I think trailer number two, if you're already doing it, that's who that one's speaking to. Mm-hmm. And the trailer number two, it's kind of like when you're already beyond trailer number one as far as commuting by bike with your kids on a cargo bike and so on. Trailer number two is, okay, now that you're here, this one's gonna like get you like super motivated. It's gonna be more emotional because now we're talking directly to those people, not just to a general audience. And I think, you know, that's why I think the second trailer was more meaningful to me.
Right.
But I think to introduce people to a trailer one is probably the appropriate trailer.
There's like a funnel. It's a funnel of the audience, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
At the top, the first trailer is like at the top of the funnel and it has to be wider, more widely accessible. And as we all circle the funnel, some people are going to fall out. Other people are going to get down deeper in the funnel. And then that's where trailer two hits you, where you're like, all right, you've bought into this so far. Now we're getting into the nitty gritty of what we're doing as a movement, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a good way that you put it, because a lot of times you'll see a trailer one come out and then a trailer two come out, and a trailer two when it comes out is maybe it gets a little bit more into the story, or it gets a little bit more into character development. But I think, like you said with this, it's more movement based, more so than documentary. And yeah, that's a perfect descriptor, is that you come down the funnel and now that we have you hooked, here's the deep and dirty that's going to get you to watch or whatever, you know?
Yes.
All right. So yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it when I figure out where.
You have to organize some kind of screening.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And before we were doing the show, me and Clarissa were just talking, like, how are we going to do a screening, you know?
And not only that, we should introduce them to our Filmocracy friends that are always looking for new content. I'll put a shout out to them for Paul over there at Filmocracy.
What's Filmocracy?
Filmocracy is that, it's another Kickstarter that I donated to. I don't donate to a lot of Kickstarters, but I like this idea. Filmocracy takes all the unsold movies and all the micro movies.
Okay.
And puts them on a streaming service.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's like is the streaming service something that you subscribe to? And
it is a subscription base, but it has beyond just paying a subscription, because it's a smaller audience. They want more feedback, so you actually earn credit within the platform by doing activities like reviewing a movie or, you know, rating a bunch of movies, that kind of stuff.
So Filmocracy,
yeah,
like democracy, but Filmocracy.
Exactly.
Okay, I'm gonna check that out when we're done here.
Cool.
Awesome. I love that idea. All right, Ted, are you afraid of heights?
A little bit.
Are you afraid of like 30,000 feet in a balloon kind of heights?
Yes, yes. That is a very scary proposition.
Very scary proposition. Yeah, I mean, and then scaling the outside of a balloon at 30,000 feet. How about that one?
scaling the outside of an icy, ice-covered, shrapnel-throwing balloon. Yes, that is death-defying.
Who are these people? Like, this is based on true events?
Something like that, I'm sure, yeah.
Okay, let's back up for a second. We are talking about the Aeronauts.
The Aeronauts.
Yeah, it is a Amazon Prime original. And when is this coming out, do you know?
I think December.
December, okay. Yeah, the Aeronauts. Again, we go back to what we say. I mean, it's low-hanging fruit as far as barrier to entry, of course. I'll watch it, and I mean, I love these kinds of movies.
So Amazon was trying to do something very specific, I think, with this trailer. I think the shots that you're talking about and all of the epic wide-angle shots of them in a balloon with butterflies and ice and falling and all that, they were selling, like, the big screen sell, you know, when we're talking about whether we're see Apollo 11 in the big screen or at home, you know, streaming.
Oh.
And I think they really said, you know, the end card calls you to experience this in the theater in December, you know? So it's like, they really want you to go to the theater. They're trying to upsell the theatrical version. But, you know, for someone like you that's, you know, like an hour away, you know, like the kids and...
Oh, for sure,
like,
yeah.
$100 for the night. It's like, well, that's nice and all, but I could totally wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then watch it in my house with my surround sound.
And, you know, the thing about it a lot of times is that we're backed up on so much content that we want to see. I mean, there's always something, right? You go to HBO and you're like, I want to see that, I want to see that, I want to see, you know, and there's all these movies and shows and stuff. The main thing I would say is, like, those 3 weeks, you're not even going to miss them because they're just going to tick by while you're just trying to get caught up on any other content.
Totally.
But, I mean, I could see, though, a big screen IMAX type event with when they're 30,000 feet above the earth looking at the sky and stars and they're on this balloon, and for sure.
They could see like the atmosphere.
Oh.
The edge of the atmosphere, you know?
And they wanted to predict the weather in what, 1872 or whatever? Ha! Yeah. They can't predict the weather now with all the technology they have. Come on.
I don't know. You have the Lompoc weather down pat. You have it like 2 weeks like this, 100 degrees, and then we're all good.
Predictable. It's predictable insofar as it's the same thing all the time. Like, you don't need to look at weather. You know what it's going to be. What's tomorrow? Sunny. What's it going to be like in the morning? Foggy. I mean, you already know that.
I know.
I mean, I'll tell you though, predict the weather in like Cleveland, Ohio or something with the lake effect. And oh man, it's gotta be so hard.
Right. It is a lot more variables. There's a lot more variables there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I'm going to watch this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
This is a no brainer. I think Anne and I are excited about the cast, and you know, it's Jyn Erso and what's his name? Newt.
Yeah. The cast is totally, I mean, the cast is solid. And then what I like about the trailer is, and I think this is kind of how the movie's going to go down too. I think the movie's probably following the trailer, is you kind of start off with the hopes and, I hate to say dreams, but the hopes and...
the aspirations.
Yeah, of what they're setting out to do. And then you have the plot twist that you have, which essentially is like they're in peril, they're in trouble, and how the heck are they going to get out of this?
They're stuck in the sky.
I mean, it's not like you just go like pop it with a pin and float back to the bottom. I mean, so all right, cool. So the Aeronauts on Amazon, and it comes out in the theater as well. Just Mercy.
Just Mercy.
Just Mercy, man. This is, you think this is a politically driven movie?
How do you mean? I mean, it is another, you know, this is the scripted version of a movement movie where it's trying to tackle a very basic subject of capital punishment, you know?
So the modern day To Kill a Mockingbird?
I never saw or read that. Should I have seen that?
Oh, Atticus Finch?
No, I pretend like I know. Okay, what that's about,
well,
so.
I would say, I mean, obviously, like you always hear, the book was way better. I mean, the book was better, but I mean, the movie was good too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's similar, except the difference, though, is Atticus Finch being the attorney was a white attorney representing the black man, where Michael B. Jordan is the black attorney who's defending Jamie Foxx, the black man. So in this case, they're both black. No, I mean, when I say, is it a political movie? I mean, I think I'm getting more towards, there's a lot of racism that goes on when you look at Ferguson riots and you look at the stuff that went on in Baltimore and you look at all these, you know, the way the police treat black people in low income, disenfranchised neighborhoods and all this kind of stuff, you know? And is it addressing that kind of stuff, or is it addressing the culture as a whole to say that, you know, we have to stop just because Jamie Foxx says, when you're born in Alabama, you're born guilty, you know, and do we need to just stop as a society and a culture railroading people into prisons? I mean, and then you look at the disproportionate number of black males and, you know, Hispanic males and all this in prison. Is it sending home a message geared around that kind of stuff? Or is this more or less just like, I don't know, a heartwarming story about like people coming together again as a community to stop the injustices?
Right. And I think it's the latter. I think to me, it's a more of a story about idealistic person and their idea of hope. And then they show the loss of all hope in the trailer. And, you know, it's unclear. It feels like it comes in the middle of the movie. It feels like the movie finishes on an upswing. But as we've learned from trailer editors, that maybe that's artificial, that might be out of sequence.
Right.
But there's a line where Jamie Foxx says they can never take that away from us. And to me, that is like the return. It's like this Michael B. Jordan's character had brought hope to a person that had no hope. And then he denied him. So he went and he showed his resolve by talking to his whole family. And then he brought it back and proved his resolve to Jamie Foxx's character. And then something happens that we're not clued into. And it feels like now Michael B. Jordan has lost all hope.
Right.
And Jamie Foxx's character has to tell him that, no, we've done something that's great for my family, for you, for me, for people, you know? So I think it's more basic and more beautiful than a, you know, admonishing tale of racism. You know, racism is going to be the backdrop for this because of where it's shot and, you know, what the true history of the events, you know? And maybe there's something to be learned about it. But I think when the core of the movie is exposed, or what at least I think should be the core, is this inner human, interpersonal human relationship.
Yeah, I think the trailer too does a good job of creating an us versus them. Kind of the us is the audience, Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, and the them is the state, the prosecution, and everybody who's against, you know, the protagonist.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess... it does a good job of the antagonist and protagonist point of view siding you before you even walk into the movie. You already know who you're on the side of, regardless of what crime he may or may not have even committed.
Do you feel like this is a Michael B. Jordan Oscar play?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't think of it in those terms. I could see that happening because it's such a somber and slow role that a lot of his acting is going to come out in like facial expressions and body language.
Yes, yeah.
And that kind of thing, where when he's sitting with families and he's talking about the injustices of the legal system, the way he carries himself in the scenes, that's what's going to make or break his shot at a Oscar.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the dialogue and stuff, I think, is just gonna feed what it's gonna feed and be fine, you know. But yeah, I think the overall unspoken acting is what's gonna carry this one.
Right.
Is that why? What are you thinking about that?
That one card where they have the three of them named, both Jamie Foxx and Brie Larson have Oscars, so they're Oscar award winners, and then Michael B. Jordan's on top of them in that same card.
Oh, I gotcha.
As the lead, and he doesn't have an Oscar. So it just feels like they're kind of surrounding him with Oscar winners. They're taking a, you know, dead man walking kind of story.
Sure.
And remaking it, which, you know, Susan Sarandon, I think she won as well for that. So It feels like the kind of movie that the Oscars plays to.
So let me ask, you think at the end he walks or he goes to the chair?
Wow.
Or it's implied?
Jamie Foxx's character, I think, goes to the chair.
You think it does? I think he goes, it's implied, it just ends like the week before he dies or something.
Okay, okay.
You follow what I'm getting at?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, like it ends with him in his cell, but yet...
We know he's not getting out.
Yeah, you know he's not getting out, and they say like, oh yeah, you know, like 2 weeks later, like whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, I mean, that's a tough one. That's definitely a heartbreaker. Let's move on. So when you go up and down the coast and you drive around and you go on vacation and stuff, you ever visit lighthouses?
I do not. We should do that more often.
Yeah. Though. Like I've been to, maybe 20 or more lighthouses. I love lighthouses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I love lighthouses. So whenever I see a lighthouse, like I make it a point to stop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And right on the corner at Point Conception is like, if you think about the coast of California, the LA coast along Santa Barbara, and then where we are, it kind of runs east-west,
uh-huh.
And then it hits the point, and then it goes north-south, right?
Ah, okay.
And that corner is Point Conception. There's a lighthouse there. And the lighthouse is on Nature Conservancy property, I guess, that they manage, and like nobody could go there. So I've been like trying to get to this lighthouse like since we moved here because I want to see this lighthouse and it's really picturesque and beautiful. You just can't get to it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at like Point Reyes and Pigeon Point Lighthouse and all these different lighthouses up and down the coast of California, and I mean, even around like Lake Michigan, I went to lighthouses. I always get into lighthouses. I don't know why. And I learned like, you know how like people, they just like nerd out on like something.
Yes.
I learned all about like Fresnel lenses and how like they the guys who used to live there are called wikis because they would do the wicks and all this stuff. Like I totally like nerd out on lighthouses. So when I saw this and then Willem Dafoe, I'm like, okay, let's check this out, man. And in a 1-to-1 aspect ratio. Like, what is this?
It is an art film.
Can I ask, though, you know? Did you get an Ingmar Bergman feel from this?
Yes.
You did, before I said that.
No, I guess now you verbalized it.
Okay.
But I definitely had a visceral film school recall.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, I think that's the last time I saw anything Ingrid.
Yeah, like The Seventh Seal or something, you know, or.
Yeah. And it's just the way that it's shot and the lighting and the camera work is just very, and even the acting is just, we've talked about it before. There are all these alienation devices, you know? So I kept thinking of like, oh, this is so amazing to work in this low light and film and just let it be grainy because you have to overexpose it. You know what I mean? So it's just like everything about it was this root of cinematography.
And what I love is shooting photography myself and everything. Like I love black and white. And when I shoot black and white, I love overexposed highlights and like crushed blacks, you know, and like the punchy contrast. So much of that kind of photography to me is like, it's the kind of stuff that is like strictly art, you know? If you wanted to make it look like what you're seeing,
right.
You know, you're going to have details in the shadows and you're going to tone down the highlights to have details there because that's how the human eye sees it.
Yes.
But when you're blowing everything out and like, you know, you get those deep blacks and everything and man, it's like I love that.
Yeah, it's almost like you're shooting the film without a net, you know? It's like that part of this the frame is lost to time because it is either too dark or blown out to pull any detail.
Exactly.
So you've made a choice that this part of that frame is going to just look like that.
And I like what you said too about when you mentioned the acting and so on. I think these are the roles, like Willem Dafoe, for example. These are the roles that people learn how to act when they get into acting as a career, whether it's acting school or theater or any of that kind of stuff, where it's so over dramatically blown away. And you just run with like crazy accents and the facial expressions and you just go with it like hardcore. You know, I think it's so amazing
interesting how they just get into this. And then A24, I mean, like, how do you capture? How do you, like, the only thing I can think is, how do you get someone like Willem Dafoe to say, here's a role for you. We're going to shoot at 1:1 aspect ratio. It's going to be this punchy black and white, and it's going to hang on your dialogue and your acting.
And it's just you and Robert, and that's it.
Yeah, sitting in a lighthouse.
Going insane.
Oh, dude, like you said, though, it's like a pure art house film.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess the big question is, though, like, when you think about funding a movie, and we talk about this all the time when you talk about, like, you know, punching the, how do we say it? Like, you know, you're checking the,
you're hitting all four quadrants. You're doing your commercial movie first to pay for your art movie.
No, I think it's more like when, you know, you're hitting the formula, let's say it's formulaic, right?
Oh.
Yeah, they're formulaic. Formulaic. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the formulas that we're doing, like we say, oh, well, people like high speed chases and they like good looking women and they like muscular men. And, you know, let's throw in comedy and then we'll just figure something out and put that together and people go watch it and explosions or something. But who goes to like funding, wherever your funding's coming from, and say, we have this like super art house auteur styled movie, and who's signing off going like, that'll be amazing, I just want to do that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's all on Robert Eggers, you know. You and I are not fan of horror, but The Witch was supposedly one of the best horror movies of its little slice in time. When was that? A couple years ago. It says 2015. So, I mean, it was a horror movies like that are a huge success. So he kind of uses that to write his own ticket on what he wants to do next. And this is a great like fable. And there's this real life story behind it. And I've listened to a couple of podcasts on it as well. So
on this movie,
I think the story of this lighthouse,
okay,
is something that has been studied as an unknown missing person kind of event. And because of the
wait, this is based on true story.
I believe it is.
Oh, wow.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that it was the yeah.
So we have like a theme going this week.
always.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that. And I think in the coming months, you're going to see this on Canopy, because Canopy has tons of A24 movies.
They do.
And I mean, is this going straight to theater? I mean, not straight to theater, but is this going to theater first?
I believe it's theater. I mean, theatrical. I think.
Wow.
That's A24's main deal is theatrical, I believe.
Okay, so. Yeah. And it was funny, too. I was watching this with Clarissa, and A24 splashes on the screen, and she's like, ooh, A24.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
So she's a fan.
Well, they have a very unique palette of movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think if you're into Marvel, big blockbuster, explosion, superhero, I don't know what you want to call it. If you're into all that stuff, well, it's readily available. But if you're into slower, more dialogue, story-based, like let's have tearjerkers or whatever, who knows what it is, then A24 is like your movie house, you know?
Yeah. And the art, another, you know, just the art of every single film that they make has this special, you know, it's the home for the auteur almost, you know, it's the home for the director.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
The director that wants to do his own thing.
So you're going to watch this?
I'm going to try to see this. Yeah. It's a little hard for me. I'm not a big fan of black and white films.
Like in general, regard like modern black and white or black and white, like Casablanca,
probably doesn't matter.
Oh.
My favorite black and white film is probably Le Jeté, which is not even really a film. And then my second favorite is the parts of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you know color's coming.
Because it's a setup, you know, because it's a...
Exactly, yeah.
It is a big setup.
Okay. See, I like black and white, but I think the reason I do, and I know Clarissa likes black and white too, and I think the reason that we do is because for a number of years I lived with my grandparents when I first moved to California and everything. Uh-huh. And my grandmother would watch these black and white films from her day, right? From the 30s, 40s, and so on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, movies like Double Indemnity or Sunset Boulevard, mm-hmm. you know, and you'd have all these, you know, like Barbara Stanwyck and Fred McMurray and all these old actors and so on. And and I would watch them with her a lot of times. And then, like, you get to the point where, and even like the Bogart movies, even still like Maltese Falcon or Casablanca or something, and you watch these old movies, and maybe it was just the nostalgia and endearing moments with my grandmother watching all these old 30s and 40s movies is the reason I like them. And it really has nothing to do with the movie because, you know, I mean, let's face it, the acting was pretty like heavy and thick, you know, mm-hmm. and they weren't great movies. They were heavy in dialogue. And I mean, it's a lot of the dialogue is like, look here, Kappa, see Kappa, you know, like, and it's like that kind of stuff. And you're like, really, is this what I'm watching? But like, I don't know, maybe because I was watching with my grandmother, you know,
it was the whole atmosphere of the whole event.
Exactly. And then when you see it, yeah, like you're more like you have that heartwarming feel towards, you know, a 38 special, like where when the guy shoots it, like he throws his hand at you while he's shooting it. But yeah, I think I'm gonna watch this. Ingmar Bergman films, a little bit dry, a little bit slow moving. I have a feeling this may be the same, but oh, I got one for you.
Yeah,
I know one black and white movie you love.
Okay, tell me.
Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yes, yes, Young Frankenstein.
Got ya. I got ya. Okay,
there you go. Well played.
All right. So Lighthouse, Just Mercy, The Aeronauts, and Motherlode. They all seem to have like that I don't know, what would you call it? Like that call to action, documentary,
historical fiction
feel, flared theme we got going this week, right?
They all have a thread of reality, whether it's, you know, the reality of insanity at a lighthouse, or the reality of car culture versus bike culture, you know?
All right. So speaking of thread of reality, The Boys.
Yes.
So,
oh, did you watch it?
We tried The Boys.
Oh no.
Yeah. I think in the first episode, and spoiler alert, if nobody's seen it, but in the first episode, when the really fast guy hits the girl.
Right.
And she like explodes.
Yes.
Like Clarissa was pretty much done at that point.
That's the same point Anne was done.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. She's like, I'm out.
So she watches it, and then they get to the point where they get into the, I don't know, what would you call it? Like the playhouse? The not a brothel.
Yeah.
The playboy, the club or whatever.
Yeah.
Where like you had the tiny superhero and he runs and springboards and dives into the vagina, you know, and... And it's doing all, and then it's like the Jesus guy, but yet the Jesus guy is like making out with some dude.
Yes.
You know, and I think Clarissa was just like, with all that's going on and all I've seen so far, like this is going no. And then the guy's like, come on, just smoke a little pole for me, you know? And then she's just like, I don't need to see women like getting raped just so they can have like a role in like a superhero team. You know, and
right.
I couldn't disagree with her. I'm like, you're kind of right, you know.
It is off-putting, and you know, and not everything's wrapped up in a neat bow, but there are, you know, it does have moments of justice throughout, you know, and it's kind of funny to have. So like the Deep, like I've told you, by the end you feel bad for the Deep, and that's kind of strange since he's like the first scene you see him and he's like assaulting the new girl, you know. So
for sure, yeah.
So it's amazing to me, but I don't know whether people, I'm sure there's a lot of people that can't stomach that first hurdle of the first couple of episodes, you know?
Well, and then when you, like, when the woman gets run over and explodes, and you see, like, her spine with the mandible attached or something, you know? And you're just like, this is just awful. But it got me thinking, too, because I was, you know, I was thinking, like, how do you write this? Like, who comes up with this, you know? And it got me thinking to the point where it's kind of like, again, formulaic. So you have American Pie, right?
Mm-hmm.
The American Pie movies. All right, people like crass humor, crass college humor, right? Where it's like, all right, you know, the guy's like screwing the pie or whatever it is. And
yes.
And they like Marvel movies or DC movies.
And they like, I don't know, mysteries, and they like legal LA law or something. So like, let's put it all together into, you know, and they like Dexter and they like all this gore. So let's compile it all into a TV show, and we're going to have gory superhero crassness.
So The Boys is originally from a graphic novel series, so it's definitely in the comic space already. So
yeah,
as far as who wrote that, and I guess it's created by the same people that did Preacher. So again, another very crass kind of people operating with their own kind of ethics and moral code that isn't your standard, you know, human moral code. So I think it's an interesting way to set something in a world very close to ours that isn't exactly like ours.
So how far, I mean, we did 3/4 of the first episode and we haven't been back. So how far have you gotten into it?
Right. I watched the whole thing.
How many episodes?
6 episodes.
Okay, and that's all they have right now.
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's season 1.
And you're assuming they're coming back, I would guess.
I think so.
Yeah, because they're pushing it pretty hard. I mean, you go to Amazon Video and like it's the first thing you see.
It was successful, so.
Yeah, so we did that. It's been a pretty hectic week. We haven't really watched much.
Mm-hmm.
School's in full force, so it's a lot of reading with the boys. Ha, the boys. But it's a lot of reading with them, getting stuff with school. And then, you know, I'm reading a lot of like training stuff. I'm trying to get like my knowledge on interval training and stuff for Leadville next year. So,
all right.
Yeah. I need to lay the groundwork now before like it turns into April and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. So, how about yourself? What are you guys watching or not?
So, I saw the second season of Rick and Morty this week.
Rick and Morty.
So that show is again captured my imagination, so I'm very happy.
I gotta get into that.
I think so. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say. Like,
what are you watching it on?
Just DVD, laptop, here and there, like before I go to bed, watch an episode.
No, I mean, is it streaming or is it?
Oh no, I got the DVD from the library.
Okay. DVD from, I didn't know they had Rick and Morty. Is it kind of like a Ren and Stimpy or something?
Rick and Morty is like a mixture of Family Guy and I don't know, and Futurama, and maybe a little darker, a little more cursing, and a lot more sexual innuendo. I don't know, if it's directly sexual, is that, that's not innuendo, that's like overt sexuality.
And you have a DVD player? No, I mean, I like, in what, a laptop or something?
I have a DVD player. No, it has to be the external DVD player that plugs into my laptop.
Goes into like Thunderbolt or something?
Yeah, it's like, well, it's just USB.
USB? Okay. Yeah, I mean, we have a Blu-ray, but it's part of a like a home theater PC that I built like, I don't know, a decade ago. And it still keeps going and it has great picture, but I'm afraid once that computer dies or becomes irrelevant, I don't know if I'll ever do a DVD or Blu-ray again. That's kind of weird.
You just do Roku and stream over that. That, right?
Dude, there's so much content on streaming nowadays from, I mean, anything from HBO. I mean, well, hello, Disney Plus is coming out and I don't even know how, what is it, 58 days or something?
Oh, let's check.
Come on, I got it. Oh, we give the weekly countdown. Not that Ted is benefiting.
I'm not affiliated.
Give me the countdown.
So Disney Plus is streaming in 59 days, 5 hours, 49 minutes, and 3 seconds. Oh, 2 seconds, 1 second.
What a guess. I said 58 days. I was off by a day.
You're off by a day. Your internal calendar is amazing.
Internal calendar. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at Disney Plus and all they have, oh, and the thing is, like, me and the boys, I mean, they are beside themselves. Daddy, when is Clone Wars? We want to watch Clone Wars. I'm like, kiddo, you got like 60 days to go. How long is 60 days? Is it tomorrow? No, we have a while.
That's like Willem Dafoe at the end of the trailer. Have we been here 5 weeks or 2 days?
Exactly. Exactly. That's how it is. No, but like the Clone Wars, man. I mean, Disney Plus drops. I mean, we're binging the Clone Wars. I'm gonna. Clarissa will come home. Is dinner ready? Huh? Clone Wars.
One more Clone Wars.
So, okay. Last thing, and then I guess we can get out of here.
Yeah.
So Timmy is doing a share thing for like show and tell, whatever, on Monday. And he made like this homemade X-Wing fighter. Maybe I'll put it up on the blog.
Cool.
So he does this homemade X-Wing fighter out of his Lego pieces. I mean, this thing is totally cool. Like, if you were into Legos and like this was like what was on the cover in the box in the store, you'd be like, I'm gonna buy this thing. Like, it's that good, right?
Yes.
So I told him, I said, you know how you got to present this, don't you? And he's like, I how do I present it? You know, like, he's just totally baffled. I said, you gotta sing the part in the Star Wars gangster rap where Luke says, Yoda, why you gotta be a player hater? You know I still must confront Lord Vader. Luke, not ready are you? There's a city in the clouds where they keep up my crew. A Jedi's gotta do what a Jedi's gotta do. Vader, I'm coming for you. So I tell him that. He's totally like taken aback. He goes, Daddy, that is amazing. He said, say that again. So I say it again. And finally, I'm like, let me play it for you. So I played a Star Wars gangster rap. So he's memorized it. And as he's presenting his homemade X-Wing, he's going to be doing the Star Wars gangster rap.
Are you going to videotape this for us?
I'll be at work. I don't know when they do it. It's going to be like in first grade, like carpet time or something. I don't know. I should tell his teacher. I should be like, hey, video. If he's dancing and singing this thing, you got to like tape. You got to video this. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know. And his teacher is a huge Star Wars fan. So she learns that Timmy likes Yoda. So what does she do? She gives him a Lego Yoda guy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I was like, Tim, you got to bring this back. You can't have her giving you Legos. Oh, no. She said, I can have it. I'm like, give it back and just tell you want to share with everyone else.
Yes.
Of course, he's like, but she gave it to me. I'm like, okay, I get it. You're six, you know? But anyway.
Have you seen the new Star Destroyer?
Have I seen what?
There's a Lego Star Destroyer. And I think Anne showed it to me earlier this week. The video was just uploaded on the beginning of September.
Okay.
And this Lego has 4,700 Lego pieces.
Dude, it's pretty amazing. 5,000 pieces.
Yes.
Do they give dimensions?
That would keep you busy for a little bit. No. Do they? I don't think they do.
Yeah, these things are awesome, man. They're just so expensive.
So this, I found dimensions. It says it's 17 inches high, 43 inches long, and 26 inches wide.
Dude, that's almost 4 feet.
Yeah.
Wow. That is like, you know what that is? That's like a display piece.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not playing with that.
No.
For $700? Dude, you build it, you put it on display inside of a glass case because you don't want it to get dusty.
Right. You still have to dust it a little bit.
Ugh,
you
know? Brutal. All right, man.
Cool.
Yeah.
How was your beer? How did the...
Oh, yeah. So my eyes adjusted.
The local beer turn out.
And I was able to finally read what it said. So it's a 6...
Uh-huh.
It's a 6.8 ABV and a 78 IBU. And that is
wow.
The Santa Maria Exploration. I was going to say exploitation, but mm-hmm. Probably exploiting me right now that I've had so much. No, the beer finished out great. I mean, it's like, it is a bit bitter. Let me taste one more time. Yeah, it's definitely bitter, but it's certainly one of those traditional West Coast IPAs, you know, like piney and nutty, and, you know, it doesn't have the floral notes that you would expect. You know, it's more of like the, I don't know, like I said, like a pinier, like you're chewing on a pine cone, but not so bad.
Right.
How about you? Was that beer pretty spicy?
It got spicier as it got warmer, which I guess you would expect. But then I also think that this batch that we just got today was even spicier than the one we had a couple weeks ago.
So would you say it would be like if I just threw Tabasco in mine, it's like that kind of an IPA? Or
I wouldn't say that. It's not straight up Tabasco because I think the flavors wouldn't necessarily meld, but it definitely...
Tabasco has the vinegar and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It definitely has, like, if you marinated like a jalapeno and a habanero in your batch while you're fermenting it, I think that's a kind of vibe and feel. feel and taste you get out of this.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
It is a must drink. You'll have some tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, we're leaving after breakfast tomorrow. We'll get there, I don't know, pre-lunch. And then I think we're going to be like visiting my cousin and her new baby and all that good stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, hey, you have a good night and we'll see you over the weekend.
You have a good one. All right. See you later.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.